Welcome to a special bonus episode of Five or Flop, a podcast for the best and worst historical fiction has to offer. I'm your host, Erin.
And I'm Grace. And this week, we will be going a little bit more in depth on stuff that we didn't really have time to talk about in the main episodes of the podcast.
Specifically, something we mentioned very briefly, I know, during the Cartographer Secret and also a different episode that I think was The Spy.
Yes. So I will be telling Erin all about the fallout from the Romance Writers of America implosion. And Erin will be telling me more about the controversy behind Little Free Libraries.
Yes. And I will say just up front, I still use Little Free Libraries. This is just general discourse happening in the field of library science, and I leave your opinions to yourselves.
So this is stuff that's kind of a little bit too off topic to go in depth about while we're analyzing a specific book. But it's still book world literary adjacent, and so we think that for our literary-minded listeners, they're still going to enjoy hearing about this stuff.
More importantly, we're going to enjoy yapping about it.
We love to yap.
All right, Grace, let's get started. What's up with these romance writers? Do they have thoughts on the cartoon covers of romance books?
Not that I have written down, because this happened kind of before okay. That phenomenon.
Okay, unfortunate. But I have many thoughts about that.
Yes, just to fill you all in, the reason that we touched on this in the Cartographer's Secret episode is because Taya Cooper, author of the Cartographer's Secret,
of PR person of an alpaca farm fame,
queen, she won the Daphne du Maurier Award for that book, which is awarded by a chapter of the RWA.
Yes.
And the RWA, Romance Writers of America, we're going to give a little background. It had at its peak about 9,000 members, which compared to some of its contemporaries of other genres is really big.
Yes.
Like, I think that's maybe double the size of the Science Fiction Writers of America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a genre, you know, genres publish more books. There are more romance writers than there are literary fiction writers. So it's a really big and influential organization for the genre.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded in 1980 by a Black romance writer named Vivian Stevens. That I brought that up because it's relevant, not okay. Just because I'm being weird. But in the 80s, romance was absolutely booming. Harlequin romance was really big. Category romance was really big. It's a genre that shifts a lot of books, and that is mm-hmm. still true. So she founded an imprint called Candlelight Ecstasy.
I don't know if you saw me put my hand over my mouth, but when I read ahead of where you were reading and I saw that, I gasped.
Beautiful title.
What desperate housewives ass shit is this?
Beautiful title. And I won't go too deep into this, but in my like spiral rabbit hole I did for my research for this, I read an article about the rise of the Harlequin romance.
Okay.
And apparently in its initial boom, Harlequin romances were very like, you would not think to call a romance novel conservative, but they were. Like, there was not a lot of sex on page. And when there was, it was, like, when the characters were married at the end.
Yeah.
Like, they were not having premarital sex. But Candlelight Ecstasy was, like, the sexy imprint where people were allowed to do that.
Okay.
So, and she was really all about diverse authors telling diverse stories.
Okay,
so not
that's
just
great.
White authors telling diverse stories. And she founded the Romance Writers of America so that all of these writers could have an organization to come together and support each other.
Okay.
So in that sense, it's a great organization, but it quickly grew really big. And the problem here that I'm going to tell you about is in its leadership.
Okay.
So there are some seeds of miscontent being sown before the drama, which happened in 2019,
mm-hmm.
and I'll drop a couple of those here. So first of all, they had a controversy in 2005 where they pulled all of their members and said, should we restrict the definition of romance to a man and a woman?
Oh my God.
In 2005. And they were going to do it, except the most famous romance writer of all time,
yeah.
basically, Nora Roberts, said, I will not do, like,
good.
I think this is a terrible idea.
Good for her.
I did not write this down in the notes, so you would not
yeah.
be able to read ahead and look at it. But they sent her a letter or called her or something and said, Nora, if we don't do this, we're going to be overtaken by lesbians.
What a scandal. As if that's the worst thing that could ever happen.
Yeah. So she sent them back a letter of condemnation to print in their newsletter. And they said, well, we're not going to print this, Nora. And she said, okay, if you don't print it, then I will buy an ad page and print it there.
I love that.
Yeah, so Nora Roberts, if you're a lesbian and you read romance novels, Nora Roberts single-handedly saved you. Yeah.
Wow. Nora Roberts, I'm not a big romance reader. I've never read anything by her, but I used to volunteer at my public library all through high school. I would shelf so many of her books.
Oh.
She had like a queen whole row of shelf in the stacks.
Space. Yeah. Yes.
Her and James Patterson.
Well, what did James Patterson ever do for the lesbians? Nothing that I'm aware of.
Not that we know of.
I mean, maybe he did.
They gave him Maximus Ride. He gave him, and that was...
Okay, that was...
That was iconic in the queer community.
Okay. And then the other big controversy, this will come also into play later. The RWA gives out, they do not only give out the Daphne Du Maurier Award that Taya Cooper won. Their big award is called the Rita. It's the Oscar of romance novels.
Okay.
And in 2014, a book called For Such a Time by Kate Breslin was nominated for 2 Rita Awards. And it's a book where a Jewish concentration camp detainee falls in love with a Nazi and converts to Christianity.
No.
It got nominated for 2 awards, and people kicked up such a fuss that they, of course, yanked the nominations. But, like, that's a thing that we're going to – that's kind of a tone setter, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
That's relevant information, which is why I bring it up, even though it happened.
So that was okay, but lesbians were not okay.
Lesbians were not okay. And also, at this point in time, even though the founder was Vivian Stevens, no black woman had ever won a Rita.
Jesus.
Yes. So
things aren't looking great for the
This is this setting the stage for entering the drama.
Okay. And I have closed my laptop screen so I can't read ahead in the notes.
Good. There are a couple of names that you'll need to know, and we'll get it to them as they come up. The first one is Courtney Milan.
Okay.
So if you are a romance reader, you will likely know Courtney Milan. She's a very famous romance author, contemporary, still writing.
Okay.
Like I said, this is August of 2019.
Recent.
Yes. And it's also important to note that Courtney Milan is a Chinese woman.
Okay.
She was the chair of the Board of Ethics at the RWA.
Okay.
And she is someone who, good for her, she uses her voice.
Good.
And she pushes back against racism in the romance community. So she was using her Twitter back when it was still Twitter. And she
It'll always be Twitter.
And she was tweeting about there was an author at a small imprint who was liking inappropriate tweets suggesting things that, like, white supremacy is not real, you
Ooh,
know,
yeah.
very inappropriate things.
Yeah.
That if you know your Twitter likes are public and you are in a front-facing position, you should not do. But
it's like when the senators, like, accidentally like porn on Twitter.
When Ted Cruz, I'm going to call him. Yeah, I forgot which one it was. And then she also found books that this editor had edited that were using slurs. They were comparing Arab men to animals. They were commenting on how Chinese women are just so innately demure and submissive.
Ooh.
Stuff that's really bad.
Really gross.
Yes. And this author and this publisher
both
complained to the RWA about Courtney Milan tweeting about these things. They were like, she's causing us to lose business.
Well, it sounds like it's your fucking fault.
Well, they were also like, this book that you're reading is from the 90s, so I'm like reflecting historical accuracy. You're not doing either of those things. So basically, they just say, like, we want an apology from Courtney Milan. But the board, the complaint goes to the board of the RWA. And normally, the process for that is it would go to the ethics committee for them to hear. And Courtney Milan is on the ethics committee. But the president, who was a man, the president of the RWA is a man. His name was Damon Swade, which unfortunately is fun.
Unfortunately, that's a great name.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pen name. Courtney Milan is a pen name.
Okay, I assume most of these are, but unfortunately, that is a fantastic pen name.
I know, he did a great job. So point to Damon, I guess. But he forms a second secret committee without the knowledge of the first committee.
It's like when your friends have a group chat and then everyone has their side group chats.
Yes, it's exactly like that. So the second secret committee suspends Courtney Milan for a year and bars her from holding a leadership position ever in her life.
What the fuck?
Yes. And even the people who made the complaint were like, we didn't ask for that. Like, and they're not smart people. They were being racist online. And in their real lives, I assume.
Yes,
but I've never, yeah. So immediately people are like, no fucking way. authors start to withdraw their memberships. They withdraw their books from contention for the Rita Awards.
Wow.
Publishers start to pull out. They hold a national conference, and so many publishers remove themselves from that they had to cancel it. There were 68 open letters published by the RWA, all in defense of Courtney Milan. Hashtag I stand with Courtney trending on Twitter.
I remember that. I didn't know what it was,
though. Hashtag I stand with Courtney. And so all of this happens so full force, so quickly, that one day after the suspension, they reinstate Courtney Milan.
But of course, I love a good public shaming.
At this point, though, like, the damage is done.
Yeah,
like, you cannot build back that trust. So basically, all of these people are leaving in droves. I have no idea what the membership is now of the RWA, but I think at least 2,000 people were lost as of this incident. And now there are people are less willing to join. Those ranks are not growing, even despite the, like, big number of people getting discovered through self-publishing. Romance is a booming genre right now because of TikTok, all that.
And you would think it would become, like, if this hadn't happened, it would probably become a thing. At the end of March 2017, RWA reported 3,740 members who had published works and 3,565 members who have submitted completed manuscripts. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, you have different tiers. Yeah. Like, you don't have... Like, I could join Romance Writers of America right now if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, people can use it as a resource who want to become published authors. But then you also have, like, the big names are part of it.
Yeah. It says... I don't know. So that doesn't really tell you
much. I did research. It was really hard to find numbers on then and now.
Yeah.
But I did know mid 2010s-ish, it kind of peaked. It had 9,000 members. As a result of this, it lost two. It could have lost many more since. And also, yeah. I don't know what its replenishment rates are like.
Yeah.
It's hard to judge. But it's like, reputation is completely shattered.
Yeah.
I'm not even done. So Damon Swade was, people wrote a petition to get him to step down.
Mm-hmm.
The RWA said, you filed this incorrectly, like, on a technicality. So they wrote another one and also got the required number of signatures on that one.
Wow.
And he did end up quitting. 8 board members resigned, some of them, like, under pressure, and some of them because they were women of color and they were like, never mind, like, I'm not being part of this organization anymore. One of the other, like, interesting tidbits was, according to the bylaws of the RWA, very interestingly, you have to have at least published 5 books to be the president of the RWA.
Oh.
Which is, like, this is a very prolific genre. There are people who will...
People whip out
in
romance.
1 year, publish 5 books. Like, it's crazy. And there is evidence that he had only published 4 and then he made up one.
What a fucking scandal if that's true.
Yeah. And the craziest part, he was president for 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
He burned this whole thing down in like 2 weeks.
That's... Okay.
Yeah.
What an insane accomplishment.
When men destroy what women have built.
Literally.
When it's like white people destroy what black people have built.
It's kind of like, it's almost harder to, like, completely butcher something. Like,
to do it so
quickly and so thoroughly in that time span is almost like, that had to have been his goal, right?
Yeah. Well, then.
Like, to do it that well.
I have no idea. Well, then, of course, they're like, okay, let's try and build it back up. Let's try and fix the, you know, systemic problems that we had. Let's try and regain the trust of our membership, of our community. And so they completely, so many people withdrew from that year's Rita Awards, the 2020 Rita Awards, that they were just canceled. So, and I think, honestly, like, if you were maybe, like, not really deep into this, you might have just thought COVID. That was because of COVID.
Yeah.
So they replaced the Rita Award with the Vivian, named after Vivian Stevens, the founder. The Vivian lasted for 1 year.
Wow.
Because one of the awards awarded at the 2021 Vivians was to a book called At Love's Command. And it was about featuring a hero who gleefully participated in the Wounded Knee Massacre.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it wasn't even just Yeah. And, like, he felt bad about it later. But
it wasn't even just, like, that was an event that occurred in the book.
No. And he felt fine with it at the time, and then later he felt bad.
Jesus.
So there are some things that you shouldn't write romance novels about.
No, there's some things that don't need to be turned into a romance.
Yeah, and that's one of them. So then people are like, okay, like, well, you say you're going to do better, and then you do this immediately. So last time I had heard about this, like... So the 2021 Vivians were the only Vivian.
Okay.
And the last time I had checked, they just, like, didn't hold an award ceremony, I believe, in 2022.
Okay.
Now when I have checked, they have a little press release about the Vivian and how the Vivian has been retired. Their new award is called the Diamond Heart Award.
Okay.
But it specifically says in the press release that, like, we are retiring the Vivian and replacing it with the Diamond Heart, quote, with the approval of Vivian Stevens. So that tells me she was like, you get my name off of that thing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's not why, but I think if I was her, I would be like, you get my name off of that thing now.
Yeah.
Because she's alive.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she's still doing her thing. But now it's kind of in shambles. Like, no one trusts it anymore. It's completely, Jesus. And for good reason, like, I would never be a part of this organization anymore.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So there was all of this stuff in there about, like, it was just not a supportive environment, of course, for these writers of color to be in. And they were, the problem wasn't that the membership wasn't diverse, because I believe it was.
Yeah.
It's the
leadership.
Yeah, it's the leadership.
The crazy thing is, it's like you're repeating your own mistakes.
Over and over.
What this made me think of, you know, Colleen Hoover and It Ends With Us.
I know exactly what you're about to say.
The coloring book that came out, or almost came out. And everyone's like, you're like,
you shouldn't make a coloring book about domestic abuse.
And then, like, last week she releases a nail polish line.
Yeah.
And it's not even like the proceeds aren't even going to, like, domestic violence shelters, nothing like that. No, it's just to make more money.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, cutesy romance book.
Yeah. And I will say,
it's like the same mistake over and over.
Yeah. I do not hate Colleen Hoover the way that a lot of people do. But people were right about that coloring book. Like, that was in poor taste.
That was in poor taste.
And I'm like, I think it's not quite as bad, but it's not good either.
It's not good. And then even, like, she could have rectified it and been like, oh, proceeds are getting donated. Like, tie it in and, like, acknowledge what you're doing. But, like, you're repeating history.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely did not learn from that coloring book.
No. And it sounds like the RWA did not learn from anything.
So that's my story. I'm going to close with a little quote, and this comes from the author Cecilia Tan.
Okay.
And she is, in this case, describing what she felt like the makeup of the RWA was.
Okay.
She said, you know that moment of shock after the Trump election when the numbers came out about white women voting for Trump? These are those women.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yes. So I will leave you with that, and I will put in the show notes for this episode all of the articles that I used to research and put this little timeline together. By far the most thorough one comes from the blog of an author named Claire Ryan, so you can check that out if you want. But I think if you just want the most user-friendly overview that puts it together in a lot more detail and good linear fashion, I would recommend one of the Vox articles.
I think we're ready to migrate into my niche area of interest.
All right.
So I believe it was probably The Spy, because I know I got a copy of The Spy from a Little Free Library. I actually get quite a lot of books from Little Free Libraries. However, I am not their biggest fan. I, as some of you close listeners may remember, I have my master's in library science. And I attended briefly UNC Chapel Hill before transferring and completing at USF's online program. But one of the discussions we talked about, I was in a class at UNC, and it was all about, like, ethics in libraries, that sort of thing. And, like, libraries is like community centers, that sort of thing. And one of the topics of conversation was Little Free Libraries, which, if you're not familiar with, it's basically this organization. You give them money and you're allowed to put up a box in your front yard. And it's like Little Free Library, like, take a book, leave a book. It's a way to, like, distribute books throughout your community. But there's a lot of contention, and a lot of people are massive fans of it, and a lot of people are not. And kind of what sparked a lot of the conversation was an article that came out in 2018 from the American Libraries magazine, and it's called The Question of Little Free Libraries. So, what are these questions? The goal of Little Free Libraries is supposed to be to distribute reading books and resources, promote reading communities, that sort of thing. And to fill the need where there is, quote, library deserts, sort of like a food desert, but no one has access to libraries. Except, where do we see Little Free Libraries found?
Not in library deserts.
There was a study in Toronto that found that there's none in library deserts in their city. They were in very affluent areas with easy library access. So they're viewed as community building and important. But on the same side of that coin, you have people viewing public libraries as a waste of money and resources, outdated, not serving the needs of the community.
And that's very sad, because, like, hardly anything is more important than a library.
Exactly. And because of that, there are actually some places where when budget cuts are occurring, people are not concerned because they're like, oh, we will set up little free libraries instead.
That is so sad. That is not all comparable.
No, not at all. Because there's so, like, we have a freaking podcast recording studio in the library.
Yeah.
But not even the DC libraries. And of course, it's more expanded services because we are in a city with an urban population. There's literacy classes, English as second language. There's like job resources. There's book talks. There's like crochet clubs here. There's like a million different things to do. So it is not a substitute, especially when you're only putting them up in areas that have access to books.
Yeah.
And in addition, calling them free is questionable. They charge money to register and you get a pre-built box, and then people drop, I don't know if you've seen the ones in DC, people drop hundreds on like theming them and painting them, and people decorate them for the seasons and that sort of thing.
Some of them are cute.
And also people will set up ones, and I forget where the example was, but I know we talked about this in class. People will set up ones like on their own without going through the organization, and then they'll get sued and have to take it down.
That's horrible.
Because, and it's very unclear where the money that goes to the Little Free Library Foundation, I don't even know if it's a foundation, it's very unclear where that money actually goes to, and if it's reinvested in the communities, if it's reinvested in libraries, or if it just goes in someone's pocket. Also, there's very often very poor quality of books, so it's not a substitute for library books.
No, not at all.
Half of the time, it's just, well, in a
like
lot
the
of...
Spy.
Like the spot. Well, that's just a bad book. It was in good shape, the copy I have. A lot of people use it as like trash receptacles. Like a lot of people take books and not replenish. It's not great. And in some areas you get like a lot of like right-wing propaganda in there. Lots of like extremist Christian stuff. That's not as common here in DC that I've seen, but in a lot of areas
it happens.
Also, there's been a lot of people who, I don't remember how long ago this was, but do you remember on Twitter what it was like? From this like police department, and it was like, oh, people kept stealing from the Little Free Library, so the police officers came together and donated books. How are you stealing from a Little Free Library?
It's resources. It is not stealing.
So it's used as like a ways to kind of give poorer communities a worse image because they're like, oh, these heathen kids are stealing. Or they're just taking books.
I saw like a couple days ago a TikTok of a girl like taking a book out of a Little Free Library. And all of the comments were like, Bestie, I hope you went back and put a book back in there. Like, that is not how it works.
No.
It's not one-to-one.
No.
It is not. The goal is for people to read books.
Yeah, and, like, it's great to have as a resource to replenish, but, like, you can't be punished for not. Like, especially if you don't have access to books.
Yeah.
So there's lots of people accused of thieving and stealing. They're also, like, if you think of the locations that have Little Free Libraries, they are a very clear marker of gentrification, especially with the amount of work and the funds that go into theming and decorating them. There's been quotes in some of the articles where people are like defending it. And then it's like, oh, but they're really only in certain neighborhoods. And, you know, they mean like middle upper class white neighborhoods.
Yeah.
It's a very clear sign of gentrification. It's just excess funds going into that instead of any funds being given to libraries in areas where they need those funds, where they serve populations who need improved access to books and services.
Yeah. I've loved really like Little Free Libraries a lot. I take books out of them. I just took a bunch of books off my shelf to not have to move them and put them in Little Free Libraries. But all of this tracks. Like it makes sense to me that unfortunately they're not doing a uniform good.
No, and they don't work in every neighborhood. They're not a replacement for libraries. The biggest issue from a librarian and library standpoint is that people view them as a replacement or even a complete extension of libraries when it's not.
Yeah.
That's not what it is.
And when you see, like, even when you're looking at them in a good light, it's just, like, a nice little thing. And there's some circulation of books. There's a little community aspect there where, like, I don't want this. Maybe you do. But that it doesn't touch the level of support that a library provides.
No, not at all. So that's where basically the issues come into play is a lot of people are seeing it and continue to see it as a reason to justify budget cuts for libraries. You also have the same people praising these who are like completely anti-libraries, say they're really outdated and stuff, all the stuff I mentioned at the beginning. But yeah, so that's basically where it comes down to. There's a lot of debate, especially in when it comes down to people saying that they're a replacement and then look at the areas they're in, like they don't need to be there. Personally, I have a lot of issues with the organization itself and how much they charge for you to get like a registered pre-built box and you have to upkeep it. And they're not really allowing for communities to create their own.
That's crazy.
And that's my biggest issue with it.
Yeah, their policies, if you want to promote reading,
their policies may have changed. I am not sure. But yeah, I'm definitely going to leave a link to this article from the library's, what's it called? From the American Libraries Magazine. It's a really interesting read. From what we see here in DC, you can definitely tell that they are markers of gentrification. We live in a very gentrified part of DC, and you see them everywhere.
You definitely do.
Yeah, not great. If I wanted, I could go on so many library rants, and this is just one. The other is the racism of the Dewey Decimal System, so maybe that's a season two bonus episode.
Oh my gosh, in between all of the movies and TV shows we're going to be watching?
Oh my god, yeah, we're going to have a bunch. But yeah, this is all to say, libraries are one of the best community resources there is. You cannot replace that with a box in your neighborhood. That doesn't mean you shouldn't use Little Free Libraries if you're there. I often grab books and bring books I'm finished with there. I don't think it's inherently evil. I don't think the goal of it is.
But it is always better to be informed.
It is always better to be informed.
And to support your library.
And to support your library, first of all. And to know of other views that are out there. So we're just kind of presenting you with some knowledge about Little Free Libraries. That's all we have for this bonus episode, but we do have some special knowledge about when we're going to be starting season two.
Yes, so you're going to have to miss us for the next couple of weeks, but on Tuesday, April 23rd, we will be back for season two.
And we are so excited. You can find our season two Storygraph reading challenge available now. So if you want a sneak peek at what we're reading, should we let them know the first book we're reading?
Let's
do it in case you want something to read in the next 2 weeks. We are reading All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yes.
Netflix miniseries.
Very famous man.
Yes.
Very famous book. If you want to know what else we're reading this season, like Erin said, you can check our Storygraph reading challenge. But if you want to be surprised, you can just follow us on this journey week by week.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a little bit more fun, too, we would say.
Yes.
In the meantime, make sure to follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. @fiverflop_pod. If you have any questions, you can email us at fiverflop@gmail.com.
And don't forget about that recommendation form in the bios of all of our social medias.
And until then, happy reading and happy gossiping.
Happy yapping.